Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we make time for Toski as we welcome the multi-Hall of Famer regular contributor, Bob Toski. So stay tuned to get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. So glad you're being along. What is it? It's time for Toski. Yes, indeed. The multi-Hall of Famer, the godfather of the golf swing, the guy who knows more about golf than a lot of people combined, is back on the show. So we're pleased to have him. So let's welcome the great Bob Toski back to Teed Up with Keith Jones. Bob, good to talk to you, my friend.
Well, Keith, I appreciate those kind words. I don't know how great I am, but... you know, there's an old saying about a guy named Jesus, I guess, is how great thou art. Yeah.
Well, you're 98 years young, so you're at least part of that was great. Maybe the last 5 years or so has been great.
Well, I wish I was 98 years young because I don't feel that way. But I accept the fact that God has given me this opportunity to live on earth for 98 years, and... I don't think I've enjoyed 98 years better than most anybody.
Yeah, not a lot of people have that number that they can put on their resume. That's for sure. But we always enjoy having you on. Bob, you never know Bob was 98 because he's going to get into multiple things this hour. And yeah. you're going to say, okay. How did he remember 1929? And how did he remember? Yeah, exactly. That's the shot that he hit in 1954 on his way to the PGA Tour Championship. That kind of thing. The trophy, not the championship like now. They give you like $20 million for winning the FedEx Cup or.
Yeah, tell me about it.
I don't need to. I always use the Johnny Unitas story that I heard a long time ago. Johnny Unitas, one of the greatest quarterbacks ever in the NFL, played for the Baltimore Colts, and sold carpeting in the summertime to be able to afford food and clothes for his family. So Hall of Famer or not, there you go. So anyway, Bob has a similar story, but he got paid, I guess, a lot of that. You made $50,000 when you won the PGA Tour title. But $50,000 then would be quite a bit of money now. But that's, you hear that all the time. But I'd rather have the millions.
When I won the world championship, I wasn't thinking of $50,000. I wanted winning a world championship with the greatest field in the history of PGA Tour that year, with all the foreign players that were invited. That to me was a feather in my hat, to beat all these great players from all over the world. And the only guy that wasn't there that I wish he had been there and see what would have happened was Ben Hogan.
Yeah, it's interesting, the players that you played with and drove around the country with and such, and the great stories you have, in which we'll get to some of those, I'm sure, this hour. I was reading an article recently, and it was about the changing of the tour stops, not the destination per se, but the sponsorship and the titles of them, because gone are the celebrities that used to be attached to the PGA Tour, which really kickstarted it in the 60s and 70s, guys like Glenn Campbell and Bing Crosby and Bob Hope and Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr. I mean, it's just the list is extensive. Dinah Shore had her name on an LPGA event, a big one, and all that's gone. But Byron Nelson was the first PGA Tour player to get his name on an event, and it's morphed over the years, but Byron Nelson's name is still in the title of the tournament, so that is great to see. And you spent many a moment with the great Lord Byron.
Yes, I think I told you the story about the exhibition he put on for me at Cypress Point back in the, this was in the late 60s, I think, when he had retired, but I never saw an exhibition of ball striking with a driver with no tee, and I was calling all the shots, and he was producing low shots, high shots, left to right, right to right, and right to left, rather, and he controlled the ball with a driver off the turf with no tee, and I just couldn't believe how well controlled the ball flight and the distance of the balls were when I called the shots, and he produced them, and he did it so effortless. It felt like he wasn't even trying to, and it showed you how great a talent he was. Of course, he was tall and he was strong, but he had a demeanor about him that he acted like he was just lucky to be out there. He was probably one of the most humble players to have played on the tour and to have achieved what he did. You know, a lot of people don't realize it. When at the Masters, I don't know if you remember this, but he was in the playoff with Hogan. And at the end of five holes, Hogan had a three-shot lead, and he made one more birdie after that. And Byron birdied six holes on the back nine to win by one stroke.
Well, that's when they play the extra full round in the tournament. Yeah. If it was tied,
yes.
Now they just go to a sudden death, and we saw that with
can
Rory.
Can you imagine him shooting six birdies to knock off that little man? Yeah. That's golf. I mean, it's talent with a capital letters. I can't put it any better than that. And I saw all these guys play, and I saw their swings and their styles and their demeanors and the way they carried themselves. And it's all different today. You never heard any complaints about money or all these other problems that they talk about today. They just wanted to play golf, and they wanted to win, like I did. And for me to have achieved that at my little size body, I'm grateful that I had that kind of potential energy to then turn it into kinetic energy and do it consistently. But, I've been blessed, and more ways than one, Keith.
Yeah, you know, Bob, but those players, including yourself, did it for the love of the game, and that's still stayed with you. You're still doing things for the love. You're still teaching, and things like that, and that's been lost a lot. And I wouldn't trade my years on the earth for any of the younger generations and stuff. If I would have gone back a decade or two and been around in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and into the 60s, because that was the heyday of sports, and didn't matter if it was horse racing or baseball or what the sport. It was just a great time in our American history, sports-wise.
Well, I don't know whether you will agree with this, but as you said, we played for the love of the game, and today they play for the love of money. It's a different attitude about life, and they're making enough money they could live a healthy, wealthy life like you can't believe. Or I think Sam Snead won 80 tournaments and he never made $1 million.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And nowadays it's more about the lifestyle and the expectations and such. And it's interesting because when you guys played, and even into, I would say, the 80s and close to the 90s, golfers were not considered athletes. You know, so John Daly's an exception because the guy hits it still a ton, and he's a little rotund. But it, you know, that came much later after you guys finished playing.
Well, and to prove that point, Keith, we weren't considered athletes in a sense. You're right, and especially some little guy like me that didn't weigh more than a rooster, and. To play as well as I did, but how long did I teach golf? It feels like an eternity, but
still, at least half a century.
And to prove your point about athleticism, I taught the best athletes in the world, whether it was baseball, basketball, football, hockey, you name it. And every one of them said this was the hardest game they ever played. So what does that tell you?
It still is. I mean, whether it's Jordan or whether it's one of the guys on the celebrity tour or what have you, those former athletes, the one thing they have is competitiveness. And that stays with you. That's why golf is such a great bond for the former professional athletes, because they have that competition level still be pretty high. But it's interesting, I say that, but to a person almost, they cannot master the game. Some of them have a hard time with even the M, the A, or the S. So a lot of times they end up being a mess instead of a master of the game. And that's because that's how tough that little white ball or whatever color you choose these days is sitting there waiting for you.
Yeah, and if it could talk to you, it would say, what are you in a hurry for? Why don't you take your time? I'm waiting for you to do it right and not hurry and not force your swing and put me in the fairway where I belong. What the hell are you doing? Hit me in the trees and in the bushes and in the rough and in the bunkers and out of bounds. So if the ball could talk, he would be a little bit upset with all these golfers.
That is true. Keep it in short grass. And you know what? The ball, at one point, is going to talk back, because players, especially at the professional level, always end up talking to the ball.
Oh, yeah. You'd be surprised the words they use when they talk to it. I remember Billy Maxwell was playing in San Antonio, and he drove the ball down in this ravine, but he had a playable shot. But I could hardly see him, but I could hear him. And he's cursing at this golf ball before he hit it. I mean, he was telling that ball everything in the world. You dumb SLB and this and that. And he hits this ball out of this position, hit a tree, and came back over his head. And that's the last time I heard him talk to that ball.
Oh, boy. There we go. We're starting it good with the great Bob Towsky on Teed Up with Keith Jones. See, I have to make time for Towsky, don't we, guys? It's a given. This guy is a gift right now, and he'll be 99 in September and going strong. So that part is really, really good. So in case you're concerned, worried, or questioning it, no, Towsky will continue to come on the show, mostly because he demands it. And when Towsky says, hey, I want to do something, he's going to do it. So we have an open door policy, and Towsky always seems to walk through it.
Well, Keith, I think I've bypassed the number of months I need to get to September, right? When you start in January, February, March, April, May, that's 5 months.
So many stories ahead coming from the Multi Hall of Famer after this break. We're back and pleased to spend the hour with Bob Towsky, making time for Towsky, and Tusky's always got something to say. So when he says, I want to come on the show, we say, okay, what are you going to talk about? What do you want to talk about? But he can talk about decades. You pick a decade, and Bob will tell you what shot he hit or what person he was working with when he left at the top of the game to spend more time with his family, raise a family, and he started the golf teaching segment. It's crazy to think. Now, Bob's not the only one, but he was the most prominent one. Sorry for guys, I'm going to Mr. Flick and stuff. No disrespect to those guys, but you have taught. It's one thing to be playing with so many Hall of Famers and so many great players, but then you start teaching, and then guys like John Jacobs, who doesn't probably get his credit, and my buddy Jim Flick, you know, and guys like that. It's a who's who of teachers that you taught with as well.
Yeah, I remember you mentioned Jim Flick, and when I was inducted in the Hall of Fame, to be the first live teacher to be inducted in the Hall of Fame, I remember once when I was making my speech, I looked up, they had all these photos of these guys in back of me up on the wall above me. And I said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm happy to be inducted while I'm alive. I said, you see all those guys up there in the back of, on the walls? They were all dead before they were inducted. that got quite a hand.
That is true. You know, and it's interesting. I'm trying to remember when we first met, and also back to the first time that you started coming on this show. And I think it was at that induction that we met. Was that 2015? No, I'm trying to think.
It was earlier than that.
Well, 90 for the World Golf Teachers Hall of Fame. Maybe that's what you're...
Yeah, I think it was 2000 or 2010, somewhere on there.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so right in there. And then, so you've been coming on the show at least 10 years. and look what it's done for you. It hasn't aged you at all. So this is good. I feel like a positive part of your life now.
Well, you know, I made a visit to Ocean Reef where I was there from 1960 to 72 with a friend of mine that drove me down. And I saw a lot of people that were the sons of the families that I knew back in the 60s. And it was amazing how they looked at me like, where'd he come from? And many of them looked at me and said, we can't believe you're 98 because you don't look that way. But I said, well, I don't know if it's my diet or it's the way I carry my life, but I think a lot of it has to do that I'm happy to be living and happy to do the things I'm doing. I have a lot, as you know, I have so many friends like you, and I think that makes my life real interesting and one of happiness because I have people that I meet every day that are congratulating me or... And we all want to be recognized and appreciated as a human being. And I get plenty of accolades like that, which I'm grateful for.
Yeah, it's interesting looking at Bob's office. Well, actually, he has two offices, but his downstairs office has a few things, pictures and different things that he's won over the years and such. You know, it's certainly, we want to turn the house into the Bob Tosky Museum when you do finally leave us in about 10 years. But from beyond that, you know, we need to get together with Charlie and get these artifacts cataloged and everything else.
You're right. There's so much to be auctioned off or given away to charity, and I never thought I'd collect as many memorabilia as I have. It's just amazing. You know, we're all collectors in life anyway.
Yeah, that's true. We don't want to give it away. We'd like to have it find a permanent home in honor of the great Bob Tosky, who was inducted as the first living instructor into the World Golf Teachers Hall of Fame in 1990. But he's also was inducted into the PGA Golf Professional Hall of Fame, which is where I was at. That was back in 2013 as we get our numbers all figured out, because, you know, this is what happens. I suffer from CRS, and it gets worse and worse as you go through life. But one thing I remember is who we have on the show, and that is a good thing. It's Bob Toski. We'll be back after this bottom of the hour break.
Hi, this is Bob Toski, and you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. I'll keep my pants on.
The Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter.
The Lama.
Long. Into a 10,000 foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga Galunga.
And we're back to start the second half hour of the show, spending it with the multi Hall of Famer, Bob Toski. So many stories so far, and so many stories ahead, as Bob has lived a tremendous life. And this is not a eulogy, because he's got a birthday coming up in September, and then he's got at least, I don't know, six or seven more that he owes me after that. So we'll see what happens on that.
Thank you, thank you, Keith. And
Bobby's always up for a challenge. So now the challenge has been thrown down. The gauntlet is down. So, where are you going to go anyway? I mean, look what you've done up to this point. You still have so many more people to help.
I'm sorry?
I said, look what you've done so far, and where are you going to go anyway? You still have so many people to help.
Well, there's just so many people that need help.
Oh, that is so the truth. That is so the
you know, it's just amazing in my teaching career how many people I've helped. And then today, and I think the answer that I could give you that would make sense, Keith, is most people do not realize how poor hand-eye coordination they have. And if you have poor eye hand or hand-eye coordination, whichever you want to call it, you're not going to be a good athlete until you find your hands, learn to control your hands, which is the most important part of your body when you touch a golf club, because an ounce of touch is worth a ton of brawn. And people do not realize that your hands, wrists, and arms produce more speed than any one part of your body. And therefore, the swinging of the arms to support the hands and the shoulders, which are the carriers of the load, of the load being the arms, hands, and club head, which don't amount to a hell of a lot of weight, but the swinging force to time the club to find the ball at the base of your feet is an art that very few people have ever conquered.
And why is it so difficult? Say somebody has good hand-eye coordination. It's still difficult to hone.
The ball's at the base of your feet. Do you know in any other sport where there's a ball at the base of your feet that's small?
No.
To be driven from the face of a golf club to trying to propel the ball down a fairway that's probably 50 yards wide and you're trying to create more speed there at more distance. And the more speed you try to create, Keith, the effort of the body then works harder to create more speed. It's like a pistons in a car. If you drove the car 5 miles an hour, how much effort would the pistons have to try to, which go vertically up and down, to try to make the car or the wheels turn faster? They'd have to work a lot harder. If you drove the car 80 to 100 miles an hour, those pistons would have to go up and down a lot faster and work harder to produce the power of the engine. And you sit there with your hands on the wheel, and you have cruise control. I remember when we drove a car without cruise control. And that was a hell of a lot more difficult until they got cruise control on. Now you can drive a car, Christ. You don't even have to drive it anymore. It drives itself.
It's so true. So true. The only time I've had the shift has been on the racetrack. That's about it. You know, that's a lost art form right there. Driving a manual transmission. People say, man, what is that? Don't I have a manual now? No, you manually put it in the go and it goes. You know, it's crazy. Especially if you get on one of those hills. Let's go up the hill and you're coming out of a parking spot. Good luck on that one. So there you go.
Well, you know, when the Scotch or the English or the Dutch, I don't know, who invented the game, I don't think they ever realized that what they would create all over the world and create a sport that's so popular with the masses, because it's a sport in which at the weekend the husband says to his wife, well, I'm going to play Friday and Saturday, or I'm going to play with my boys, and we're going to have a few drinks, and we're going to try to just have fun. Well, I'll hear that all the time, but let me tell you something, Keith. Why do we play golf? To have fun or to try to make a low number?
Ooh, having fun trying to make a low number is my answer. It's a combo answer.
Yeah. There you go. If you make a low number, you're going to have more fun.
Exactly right. And if you start getting on a roll, then you have more fun along the way. It kind of compounds itself.
And I'll give you an example of that. When I played my first Masters, I was paired with Sam Snead. And I was so happy to be paired with Sam. We became friends fast. I shot 80, and I was so upset with myself because I was overly aggressive, and that I thought I could handle that golf course. And I was sitting in the locker room feeling sorry for myself. And in walks the famous Jimmy DeMarin, who befriended me and practically adopted me. And he looked at me and he said, Bob, did you finish playing? I said, yeah. He said, what'd you shoot? I said, I shot 80. He kind of chuckled and he said to me, where'd you make all your birdies? I said, Jimmy, they're all in the goddamn trees. Did you get that one, Keith?
Indeed, of course. Who's not going to get this? We're at the Great Bob Hosky. Who's not going to get that one? The jokester. But so what did that? So you're sitting there, and Jimmy DeMarin, the very renowned, successful, and a master.
Won the Masters three times.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Says that to you. Now you guys are friends, but you are stewing and you're steaming, and he comes in and he just cuts you in half with that.
Yeah, cut me in half.
So. How do you respond?
Oh, that was the old way to be successful on tour. You had if they gave it to you, you had to give it back. And once you gave it back and stood your ground, you were a man, and they proved that you belonged out on the tour. And that's the way it was. We were like cowboys out there, only we didn't have guns. We didn't. Instead of not shooting each other, we kind of cut each other up with our tongue. And that's the way it was. And I can't tell you how much I enjoyed the 50s and the 60s with all these great players.
It's like tough love. You're going to get it out there. And these are the guys that you drive around with, too. So you're probably talking about past rounds. You're probably talking about the course that you're heading to and different things and all in the car, which you can't escape, right? You can roll the window down and yell out, please help me, but that's all you can do.
How about Studebaker with two guys in the front seat and there's a guy in the back seat behind the clothes racks with all the clothes being hung up, and the guy in the back seat was me, and if you wanted to talk to me, you'd have to Well, the car naturally would stop, but you'd have to pull the clothes racks far enough so you could see me and converse with me. But that's the way it was. Being light and small, I was able to sit back in the back seat of the Studebaker. And when we checked into a motel, we all slept in the same room. Ted Kroll and Milan Marusik would sleep on these two beds, and then I'd sleep on the cot, on the floor. And that's the way it was. But I accepted that for what it was worth, and to be with a great teacher like Ted, and hear the stories of Milan Marusik, who lost all his hair during the war. You know, life is what you make it and how you take it.
Talking with Bob Toski on TW with Keith Jones, and I'm laughing not just because Bob talking about the separate. I've seen that because I think about my grandparents when they would drive down to Florida and the whole back seat would be a rack of clothes. That was my flashback when Bob was telling that story, and to just part the clothes because I helped them take it out, take some clothes out sometimes, but to part the middle and find a young golfer there would be exciting and a little concerning, but.
Oh, Keith, in 1947, I was yet to go on tour. I went on tour in 48, but in 47, my brother Jack wanted to go all the way to Miami from Northampton, Mass. And we traveled, my brother Tommy and Jack and me, we traveled from Northampton, Mass. To Miami, Florida on Route 1.
Ugh.
All the way on Route 1. Can you imagine that?
Oh, I don't want to imagine. I've been on parts of, and I think it's even worse as you get into Maine above Mass, but all the way down. I actually went to school at the University of Maryland, which is right off of Route 1. So you would have passed right by my alma mater, and, you know, it's that's tedious. How long did that take?
Century.
Pretty much. How much did you guys stop along the way? I mean, you know.
Oh, my God. We stopped in every bed and breakfast place that was existence. And the car would have motor problems. We'd have to stop and have the car fixed. And when you're going through every town with the lights, I think it took us a week to get down here.
Oh, yeah, and that's probably not taking too many stops for very long, because that's an amazing long trip, amazingly long trip. That's why part of why 95 got built, which now Bob lives pretty close to. He's happy about that, except he tries to stay off of 95, which I don't blame him either, because 95 is the new Route 1. It moves about at that pace.
And the most dangerous highway in the country, I think.
I think that's correct, especially as you get to South Florida. Ooh.
Wow. Well, to experience life from a family of 9 children to have so little that we had when I was so young, and to then have what I have as I sit here right now and in my beautiful home and think about what I have and what I've achieved, it's hard to believe it happens.
Yeah, well, that's why I always admire the picture. You know, these days, the technology allows when you talk, you call somebody or they call you, or if it's you're on the same phone type or something like that, the picture that they use shows up. And Bob has a picture of himself pointing at a sign that says joy. And that kind of sums it up, because it's always a joy to be around Bob Toski and to have you on the show and stuff. It really is.
Well, ditto. It's the same with being with you, because you're easy to talk to, easy to talk with. I like your style. You're very knowledgeable about golf, and you seem to enjoy having me on the show. So if I'm happy that you invited me, and I do a good job, and you're doing a great job, so There it is. How many times have I been on your show?
I don't know. I've got to go back in the annals and look it up. Many, multiple. So, you know, we've got quite an archive built up, and we'll we'll see what happens down the road with that. But it's always joyful to have the crotchety Bob Toski on. You know, he tells people all the time, you know, get back in line. So.
Oh, you got a minute?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I got a few minutes. Go ahead.
I gave a guy, this guy that took me down Ocean Reef, his name Mark Nicelli, N-E-C-C-E-L-L-I. And I had given him one of my custom-made drivers.
Ooh.
Persimmon drives, a beautiful-looking club, so. And when we went down to the reef, he said, how did you ever use a club like this? The face was so small. I said, we never thought about how small the face was and how small the striking area was. We knew we could contact the ball with the club face square and accelerate it and make good contact. And I said, well, why don't we just go over to... the club that I used to be the golf director at, and we just went outside and I said, tee the ball up and let me take a swing at it. And I said, it won't go very far, but I'm not worried about what that golf club, whether the face is big enough and wide enough or deep enough. I'm just going to swing and let my hand-eye coordination make contact. And I hit the ball dead straight. It didn't go probably 180 yards, but he looked at me like, I said, well, no, it's your turn. And he says, I don't know whether I'm going to make good contact with that. I said, well, how the hell do you know if you're going to make good contact until you swing? And I said, I'll tee it up for you and you make a swing at it. But don't try to force your swing and just try to time the swing so you feel like you can make decent contact. And he swung and hit the ball relatively straight, a little offline. And I said, it's in the minds of the beholder.
Makes sense. No, it is. It's mind over matter, so to speak. And, you know, you need to concentrate on the target, keep your eye on that ball, and then watch the results after you swung all the way through.
It's
see, I know a little bit. I've learned a little bit over the years, but that's part of the reason also I do the show. I love learning stuff every episode. And Bob Toski is one of the greatest teachers ever on the planet. And since he was, you know, kind enough to come back on the show, I might as well learn a thing or two along the way, or interject things that I think I might know and such. But that is also all about the game of golf, because you think you know what you know, but you don't know what you know because you thought you knew and you really didn't. And that's why people go to see Bob Toski. He's going to be back with us after this break to finish up the show. We got one more segment with the multi Hall of Famer. We'll be back.
Alright, this is Trey Cool from Green Day, and we're teeing it up with Keith Jones like we always do. It's a habit we can't stop.
And we are back to finish up the show with just a good all-around human being, a guy still helping people with their golf swing, their golf game. And if I'm ever with Toski, I need to make sure I bring a Sharpie so I can hand it to him so he can give autographs. People love the Toski, and they're always amazed that... When I tell them the kind of friends that we have become, and you know, it's one thing when you're around the legend. It's another one when he's kind of taking you under his wing. So that's personally expressed and greatly appreciated for you, Bob, because you have so many friends and so many people that know you and so many people respect you, and you've worked with Hall of Famers and some of the world's best players, Tom Kite and Judy Rankin and Bruce Devlin, amongst others.
Yes. And of course, you know, Ken Duke and turned into a successful player at the age of 44. So, Keith, love is a lasting thing. And real love is a lasting thing. And I've had a real love for the game of golf. And I would say a love for helping people. And you put those two combinations together, good things are going to happen.
Well, you got shown some love down in South Florida back in April. And tell me a little bit about that event and how that went.
I'm sorry?
The honorary of you in April down in South Florida. Tell us a little bit about how that went.
Well, it was a very humbling experience. I had a portrait made of me, which I will send you a copy of the portrait on the 8x10 piece of paper that was beautifully done. 130 guests. I had people coming that I hadn't just seen, and I had a guy named Henry Diana that was caddying on a tour and flew all the way from Houston just to be there that one night with me, which I hadn't seen in years. So, due to Joe Gazzi, who did the portrait, and Randy Mintz, who was the one that initiated and came up with the idea to do this dinner for me. As I sat there with Katie Wenzel, who's on NBC and does the weather channel, and then has her own program on Sunday at 10 o'clock. For her to be there at Master Ceremonies and sit by my side, it was a great experience, and I enjoyed being beside her because I always liked to look at good-looking women, and she was pretty attractive.
I understand, and I'll bring that full circle because your lovely bride, Lynn, who passed a number of years ago, was obviously a big proponent of yours. How would you feel about you still doing what you do these days?
How do I feel about?
Now, how do you think she would feel? Because she was a pretty big supporter of you, right?
Oh, she. Well, first of all, she never thought when we married that we would be that successful monetarily. And I think one of the greatest things she enjoyed was being Scottish. She was counting all that money that I was making. And, of course, she took good care of that problem, and she had trouble raising those three boys because she called them Indians and told me I had to build a teepee in the backyard and let them live out there. But she was a model. She loved to live and travel. And I gave her a lifestyle and a life that I promised I would do if I married her, and I fulfilled that. And unfortunately, she left me at the age of 80.
Yeah, but you know what, Bob? You are a tremendous human being, and that's what happens when you marry a high-class woman. Toski, Toski, Toski. We are just out of time, though. It's been great to spend time. Don't worry, he's going to come on in a number of weeks and throughout the year. But get out there and practice your game. Practice, practice. Take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.